Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour. It's Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 10 o'clock each and every weeknight here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Got a busy 8 o'clock hour ahead right now. We're going to head out to the Wade4.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Jeff Centel of Dog Nation. Make sure you check out all of his work there. Jeff, two scrimmages down. What did you like? What did you see? How has the team been looking so far?
Well, hey, Chris, good evening, man. I think the talk of the town in the Classic City has been the mustache on one Gunnar Stockton. Have you heard about it? Have you seen it yet, sir? Have you grown your own mustache?
Well, I am a full beard Stan supporter always, Jeff, so I keep the upper lip nice and full at all times. But I will say this, it is majestic, and it should stay.
I think that probably adds, what, 20 points to a quarterback rating? Maybe puts the completion percentage over like 65 just for the facial hair alone. The big thing is what's undoubtedly coming out of Athens, as much as it tries to kind of be kept under the wraps, is the receivers are really strong this year for Georgia. They're going to help Gunnar out a lot. The run game, the offensive line feels like it's coming around, maybe because of new faces a little bit. Also because they've got a five-star freshman that looks like, for the first time since Andrew Thomas, a true freshman, is going to start the first game at Georgia. That's where Juan Gaston is trending. He started the second scrimmage at right guard. So speaks well when a young prospect, even doesn't matter how highly ranked they are, when that guy can crack the lineup at a grown man program like Georgia, that really says something about the young player there.
Kirby Smart obviously had a lot to say following that second scrimmage. Level of concern about the defensive line, just a lot of new faces, a lot of guys that are young that maybe could contribute.
Yeah, they need Christian Miller to stay healthy, and then as the year goes on, they need Xavier McLeod, who came over from South Carolina last year as a transfer portal guy. He needs to take a step. Jordan Big Baby Hall, even though he's got a great nickname, the former five-star, needs to play up to that reputation now in his third season in Athens. They really like another freshman, Elijah Griffin. You've seen him kind of show up on all those preseason freshman All-American teams already. They just need to find about four or five guys. But I think, Chris, the difference is, compared to previous years, they've got a lot of guys that if they hit, they have NFL, maybe second round, third round potential. And that's a little bit different from Georgia over the last couple of seasons.
So one thing I thought that was interesting was Kirby was asked about the penalties that are going on, and that could obviously link to the youth that we were just talking about. Is that something that's caught your eye?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, I mean, let's face it, I think he trots this stat out a lot, that basically 55 to 65% of his team has been there for less than one or two spring practices. And he said they spend a lot of time now just teaching them football, like basic football, like things that maybe they thought they might know. Like the rules over the summer have been expanded where they get more time with the players now. And I mean, he just mentioned in his press conference today some of the things that quarterbacks might not know all the time is they're not aware of how many more downs they got. And that's when you're trying to make good decisions with the ball, you don't need to force it on second down, knowing you still got another chance on third down to make a play and move the chain. So a lot of young kids that have never played at the speed of the game that things are right now. So, I mean, that's always interesting, but I think you're going to get a trade-off with zeal, enthusiasm, and a bunch of kids that are just hungry to get better and play and have that youthful energy that maybe he's been missing over the last couple seasons in Athens.
What do you make of the depth of the running back room right now?
I think the depth there, it's kind of going to hinge on two guys that are going to be your thunderback guys, and that's Josh McCray, the transfer from Illinois, who still hasn't really got into SEC shape. The word there is he needs to lose a little bit more weight to kind of be able to outrun SEC backers and SEC defenders, and he'll eventually get there. The other name is Roderick Robinson, a guy that has been beaten up most of his career, but usually plays around 235, 240. He's been very resilient and working his way back to Georgia, working his way back onto the field at Georgia. Now, Nate Frazier feels like a home run hitter. That's a guy Georgia is expecting to do big things. I think he even got the Beats by Dre commercial that's showing up on social media this week. So I think all in all, the Dogs feel good about running back.
So we have a lot of changes, as you mentioned, going on in the wide receiver room. You mentioned all the new talent that's there. But is that going to be the identity of this Georgia football team? I know they're going to be able to do a lot more, I think, than they did last year in terms of play action and trying to push the ball down the field. But is the identity still going to be to try to run the rock, or are they going to be more of an air it out type offense?
I think it's still just going to be that. This is a Kirby Smart football team. They're going to run the rock. They're going to stop the run. But they're going to take shots with play action because they feel like they can with those big receivers. Arguably, Chris, Gunnar Stockton throws a better deep ball than Carson Beck ever did. And he's used to taking shots like that. And I guess with the mustache now, he's got to be a gunslinger that goes downfield to a plethora of receivers now that are like 6'4", 6'5", and 6'5". So not only does he have weapons, he has those big bodies that can win those contested catches.
You have any worry about the cornerback battle going on right now? It seems like there's a couple of guys in the mix.
Man, that's kind of the good worries. I think that would be rich program problems. I think the big thing for Georgia, here's what I feel, Chris. I think Georgia's got its best set of four corners that maybe Georgia has ever had at one time in the Kirby Smart era. And now it's just who starts and how they get enough run for redshirt freshman Ellis Robinson IV. Ellis has had a great camp. He was a redshirt last year. He was the number one corner in the country. He was a guy that I actually saw with my own eyes cover Jeremiah Smith in 7-on-7 competitions when they were both seniors. And Ellis comes in with a lot of hype. He's very hardworking. But as far as those recruiting rankings go, he stands as the second highest rated guy Georgia has ever signed. He's a corner. You've got Dalen Everett, who basically dismantled Texas in those two meetings a year ago. You've got Daniel Harris, who looks like a prototype NFL first rounder. He's 6'2". He's long. He can run a 10-8 in 100 meters. He's the type of guy that gets NFL general managers drooling, especially coming out of Georgia. And then they got another guy, DeMello Jones, who's quietly in the mix there too, already establishing himself as an SEC guy. I think Georgia has cornerback squared away.
When you look at the state of the rankings that have come out, coaches poll, AP poll, do you think it's a good thing for the Dogs to have a couple of teams in front of them to get them hungry and excited to prove that they are a top three team in the nation?
I think it's funny, Chris, because, you know, remember how somehow the Urban Legend got going when Nolan Smith was there for his last season, Georgia's 2022 back-to-back national title year, that somehow people were kind of putting forward that Georgia was going to be a 7-5 team?
Yeah.
Well, I think, and that was kind of very fictional at best, but I think this is the equivalent of that, putting Georgia number five when, you know, I actually did a story this week, Chris, like, where I researched it, like how many five stars Georgia had on the 2021 elite, like all-time defense. There were six of those on that defense. As it stands right now, Chris, Georgia will have 10 former five stars on this 2025 defense. And we know we've kind of seen that movie, Chris, about what happens when Kirby Smart has that much talent on defense.
Certainly so. He's become the number one coach in the nation off the back of that, so you are certainly right about that. What do you make of the state of the SEC coaching ranks right now? I think there's a couple of guys you can point out that have a lot to prove this season, like a Sam Pittman, maybe even a Brian Kelly at LSU. What do you make of the state of the coaches?
I think the Netflix documentary has everybody thinking that Brian Kelly must not enjoy his job at all. He feels like he's trapped there, a lot of pressure there. But I think right now, I don't know if you noticed this story this week, but somehow Auburn won seven championships over the past week. So that certainly has to take a few degrees off the hot seat there for Hugh Freeze, how they were able to just claim those championships. But like, in all seriousness, I think this is a you got to win now league. I think Hugh Freeze is basically at the end of his lifeboat here there with Auburn. They're going to try to win with receivers. A lot of smart football folks look at Georgia going to Auburn as the potential slip up on the road for Georgia in the season. Most think that Georgia can weather Tennessee a little bit with a new quarterback. But Auburn, like, it's always hard to win it. Auburn, Chris, I think a lot of folks that really know football, I've heard this for years, that if you're going to go to Jordan-Hare and beat Auburn, you better be 14 points better than Auburn. And if you are, you might win by 3 points or a touchdown. That's how hard it is to play in Jordan-Hare. It's a great environment. It's very loud. The tradition speaks for itself. So, you know, there's a lot of things going around the league. It feels like South Carolina is getting a little too overcooked there with all the, I guess, a lot of the momentum going behind their quarterback. Lenore Sellers is seen as an NFL first rounder right now. And we've seen a lot of quarterbacks bloom in the preseason of the college season as future first rounders. And then they kind of wilt in the heat of the schedule. So that's one of those schools that I'll have to see it before I believe it was South Carolina.
More pressure to win that week one matchup, Ohio State or Texas?
I think it's more pressure on Texas because Ohio State just won theirs. I mean, Ryan Day climbed his Everest last year, but he did it in the most unorthodox fashion. I think Texas really kind of needs to live up to the number one ranking and the Arch hype because, listen to this, if Arch Manning struggles in that first game, all of a sudden, what does Texas have? They got a pretty good defense. They got some pretty good receivers. But remember, this was the anointing season for Arch and how he was supposed to carry Texas a long way this year. And I think that's a very interesting game because Ohio State is still very talented. Somebody's still got to find a way to cover Jeremiah Smith, and I don't really think that can be done for any more than 20% or 30% of a football game.
You mentioned LSU. We were talking about them before. Do they have a chance against Clemson? Clemson is getting all the national pub right now.
I think they do. I think LSU's always going to have receivers. They've got Garrett Nussmeier. If you follow the mock draft world, like, Nussmeier's getting a lot of early first-round type buzz there. He's seen as a pro quarterback. He's very accomplished. I mean, folks forget, Chris, that when Georgia was playing in the 2022 SEC championship game when they beat LSU on the way to their back-to-back, Garrett Nussmeier was the quarterback in that game, and he threw deep on Georgia. He decided the best way to attack Georgia was over the top. So he's been around the league a very long time. He's got weapons. I think the big thing for LSU is they just got to get somewhere above, maybe two notches above abysmal on defense, and then they'll have a really big shot in some of their, I guess, spotlight games.
Before I let you go, did the Big Ten do a good job of trying to throw their Michigan scandal onto the back burner by suggesting a 30-team playoff?
Man, that stuff is asinine. I don't know about you, but, like, there's no way people need that many playoff teams. I know everybody wants to keep everybody alive and keep everybody invested, but I don't know how college football fans in general would reward maybe an 8-3 or 8-4 regular season team that goes on to win the national title. I don't know if that's going to be the epitome of Cinderella right there. When, you know, I don't know if you remember it, but there used to be a thing called B&G Music Service where you can get 12 CDs for the price of one, or so-and-so DVDs for the price of one. Well, that sort of thing would get everybody eligible for a national title. I think it dilutes what makes college football great. I know I'm going to sound like an old schooler here, but I think the playoff number, I think 12 is fine. I think 8 would have been better. We know TV rules all, but, man, if they go 24, 26, 28, something like that, that to me is just going to feel like the ultimate sellout.
Jeff, appreciate the time as always. Great stuff. We'll be reading you at Dog Nation. We'll chat soon.
Hey, man, take it easy. Have a great show.
All right. That is Jeff Centel, our good buddy there. Let's keep the college football convo going, shall we? Another one of our favorite guests going to stop by. Bill Bender, senior writer of the Sporting News, to chop up all things college football. We'll ask him about the Dogs, too, of course. We'll keep it going next. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. It's Chris Thomas tonight. You know, it's not every day that, you know, your number one overall pick potential quarterback has to go to the media and scold his grandpa. Well, that's what happened today in Texas with Arch Manning, talking about the potential of him going back to Texas. And grandpa didn't exactly get the messaging correct, and he had to go back and retract that statement. To talk about all that and more on Chris Thomas tonight, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Bill Bender, senior writer, Sporting News. Bill, how shocked were you to read that headline today that QB1 for the Longhorns had to go out and publicly scold Grandpa?
A little bit, because it was believable what Archie said at first, knowing that Peyton played 4 years and Eli played 5 years, and you know, Arch hasn't started yet, and I wonder if we'll get the best out of him even next year. But certainly a lot of fascination around Arch as he gets ready to make his full-time debut next Saturday. I know I'll be there at the Shoe and super excited to see that game.
Julian Sain will be the opposing quarterback. I'm going to guess from you, especially hailing from that area, not a shock that he was named QB1.
No, but the battle that those two had was intriguing. You know, Lincoln Kienholz hadn't really played meaningful action since that Cotton Bowl loss to Missouri. So, yeah, I mean, they went at it. But I think Julian Sain was the guy. You know, gets the ball out, has good receivers. Sounds like, you know, he's making good decisions. I thought he played well in the spring game. So there's a lot to like about Julian Sain in that game. And, you know, as much hype as Arch is going to get, if Julian Sain has a big game and leads the Buckeyes to victory there, you know, he'll be right back in the Heisman race.
How much do you think the pressure that's on Texas this season to win is going to play a factor in that opening week?
Well, I mean, I think there's pressure on both teams. They played that classic last year. And, you know, Texas is kind of like, I do the basketball analogy. They've been to the Final Four a couple times now. So it's not about success, but it is about, you know, wearing that number one and trying to win a national championship, which the program hasn't done in 20 years. And if they can do those things, certainly, you know, it'd be a boon for Steve Sarkisian, who I think is a fantastic coach. But, you know, Texas definitely has the talent. I think they have four or five guys on our preseason All-America team. They did lose a lot to the NFL draft. One concern I have, Chris, is they did lose four starters on that offensive line, and they are going to a very hostile place. So that will be a key in that first game.
CJ Carr gets the nod at Notre Dame. What do you make of that selection?
Well, it sounded like that battle was tight as well with Kenny Minchie. And, you know, I was hearing is like Minchie was really pushing for that. So, you know, CJ Carr's obviously, we know who his grandfather is, Lloyd Carr, and all the success he had at Michigan. I think he's really interesting. And that he's a five-star. Notre Dame isn't playing a transfer. They've got a tough opener, though. You know, Miami's going to be good with Carson Beck, and they've got some guys on both sides of their lines that are can really play. Potential first-rounder, Reuben Bain, for example, on the defense. So, man, I think that's going to be as close as the other two top 10 showdowns between LSU, Clemson, and Ohio State and Texas.
You mentioned LSU and Clemson. Cade Klubnik is getting all the run. Garrett Nussmeier not too far behind in terms of Heisman and potential and all that. Where do you stand right now with that matchup?
Well, I mean, we got to figure out who Death Valley is, right? Like, yeah. You know, if I were Clemson, I would be printing Death Valley Junior shirts left and right and, you know, kind of playing into what Brian Kelly said. I think it's a huge game for both teams, obviously. Cade Klubnik, he played well last year, but he struggled a little bit in those losses to the SEC schools. Brian Kelly, I don't have to tell you, lost five straight openers. So that really puts the pressure on both teams. I think as a coach, there's probably a little more pressure on Brian Kelly in this game, just knowing that he hasn't won an opener, and they tend to be very visible when LSU has lost these openers in recent seasons.
Speaking of SEC challenges, do you believe the hype in South Carolina? They got the quarterback, they seemingly have the coach, and they certainly got the love in the offseason in a top 15 ranking. Are you a fan?
Well, I mean, Lenore Sellers is getting a lot of Heisman hype, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, he played well in some games. Now, we need to see them do it every week. I thought he played well in big games last year, and they closed the season hot, with the exception of, obviously, the bowl game loss to Illinois, which, you know, is the reason why Illinois is ranked ahead of South Carolina for a lot of reasons. But they're going to be pretty good. That's a really good sneaky game on Sunday, though, against Virginia Tech and Chiron Drones. he can play a little bit. Remember, they almost beat Miami on that Friday night game last year. I think that's a fun game and a chance for a standalone game for all of us to watch Lenora Sellers up close and personal.
Speaking of Miami, do you think they deserve the top 10 ranking?
You asked me too fast, almost. Yes, but man, they got to go out and win some big games. And last year, take nothing away from them, 10-win season, you know, stubbed their toes a couple times. Cam Ward was awesome. I do think Carson Beck fits into what they want to do. At least that's what Mario Cristobal said a few times at ACC kickoff when I was down there. Carson Beck seemed to have no ill will toward Georgia. I think he is a very interesting quarterback for them if he doesn't turn the football over. And like I said, they've got some guys on the lines on both sides. So, you know, they're picked third in the ACC. Could they beat SMU? Sure. Can they win it over Clemson? I don't know if I'm there.
We're talking with Bill Bender, senior writer, Sporting News. Make sure you check him out there, covering all things college ball. Penn State, 2 in the top 25 AP, 3 in the coaches poll. I'm not hearing a ton of fanfare, though. I mean, I know they got Drew Aller coming back, but they're quietly just sitting there being regarded as a legit title contender. What's your feeling on them?
Well, that's been the question up here all summer, you know, like, can Penn State take over this Big Ten, you know, number 2 in the poll, just like Ohio State was last year, just like Michigan was the year before. So is it really their turn? And everybody's waiting to find out, you know, like 2 1,000-yard running backs, Catron Allen, Nick Singleton, Drew Aller's 3-year starter, Zane Durant and Denny Denise Sutton on the defensive line. They're loaded. They're really loaded, but it's just, can they go out and do it? And I think, you know, we'll find out in those games against Oregon and Ohio State where, you know, I think James Franklin gets criticized a lot, unfairly so at times, about those big games. You know, as it was pointed out to me last week, how many have they been favored in? But, you know, the counter to that is at some point you got to go out and do it, and this is the perfect year for them to do it.
You think Michigan has enough on their roster to outlive all of the craziness that's gone on this summer?
Well, I mean, they just landed the top running back in the country for next year. I saw that today among the news. And, you know, I think if we get the Michigan that we saw in the bowl game against Alabama with Bryce Underwood, and if he is as advertised, I think he'll have some bumps as a 5-star freshman. But the talent's there on both sides. The confidence is there. We're going to find all we need to know about Michigan early in the season, though. They play at Oklahoma and at Nebraska. So those are a couple tough road games for any freshman, let alone a 5-star freshman. And I think we're going to find out what Bryce Underwood's all about.
Here in Georgia, all eyes on Gunnar Stockton. How soon do you think it'll be before we know, or we know that we don't know about Gunnar Stockton?
Well, you know, I liked what I saw out of Gunnar Stockton in the bowl game last year. I'm going to be honest. He, you know, there's a couple plays that come with experience, but I like his mobility. I don't want to make comparisons to Stetson Bennett yet because Stetson did so much, but I like that mobility. I think Georgia is probably, you guys notwithstanding, the least we've talked about an SEC champion nationally, right? I mean, they're still Georgia, and they're still very good. And they still had 3 or 4 guys on our preseason All-American team, a couple guys on the defense like Bolden. I think Frazier's going to have a big year. I don't know that we'll learn much, obviously, in the opener against Marshall, but the schedule's a little friendlier. Those games are at home. I always remind people, I don't have the number in front of me. I feel really bad. They haven't lost a home game since, I'll put it to you this way. They haven't lost a home game since my 40th birthday. And it was that day. Then South Carolina beat them. I turned 46 this October.
Yeah, it's like 22 or 23 straight or something absurd like that. All right. So I think the problem here, though, is, Bill, love to hear your opinion on this. I think Kirby did it to himself. I think he set the bar so darn high that now that even if he has a really good team as opposed to an all-time dominant team, that's not good enough.
Well, maybe, and I think that's fair, but I think, you know, Kirby handles this a little bit differently than his mentor Nick Saban did. You know, every summer Alabama was the lead story, right? Like, are they going to win it again? And I used to always make the joke, the season doesn't really start until Alabama loses. But that was before Texas and Oklahoma joined the SEC. And that was before the 12-team playoff. And that was before all these things. And you were right, Kirby, that 21 and 22 team, if the bar was set, that was pretty high how they set it, obviously, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I'm a Packers fan, and I think every Georgia player is on that team right now. You know, we draft one a year. It's almost like a quota. But I think it is, you know, what is success at Georgia? And again, they won the SEC, and they're still going to be in the mix, and they're still going to be very, very capable of winning a national title this year.
Speaking of Oklahoma, you think there's any pressure on Venables this year?
I do, and that's why that Michigan game is so interesting to me early in the season. You know, John Mateer was in the news last week. We don't have to review why. I mean, it was a very strange story, but he's super talented. They bring in Ben Arbuckle with him from Washington State, and, you know, the mobility, and he was among top five in total offense last year, so if he can get them going, that'd be nice. They're still tough to beat at home. I still think they need to figure out how to win on the road in the SEC, and that takes a few years. But, again, for as good as week one is, week two's pretty light with the exception of that Oklahoma-Michigan game.
Before I let you go, do you think Georgia Tech has a real shot to take down Colorado?
I do. What a fun game that's going to be. Two really good quarterbacks, Caden Salter, Haynes King, both, you know, prolific in how they run. And, you know, I think I did a stat today. I was working on a preview for week one. Between them, they average like 900 yards rushing and 10 touchdowns the last two seasons. So there's going to be a lot of exciting plays in that game. And I know in your listening area, our own Bill Troche, my editor, he's working on a piece about that split national title, which good luck explaining that to my 14-year-old son that, you know, once upon a time, Georgia Tech and Colorado split a national title because there were two different pools and two different champions. Part of me misses that world and part of me doesn't.
Yeah, well, sometimes you feel like a computer could make it simpler for us, and then we remember those couple of years that stand out like a sore thumb where you're like, this just isn't right, and that was certainly one of them. Bill, appreciate the time as always. We'll chat soon.
Hey, I always love talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
Right.
Take care.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it as always. All right, when we get back, let's hear from your Atlanta Falcons. I got A.J. Terrell, Casey Washington, David Sills, Zach Robinson, Zach Harrison. Yeah, you want all the latest sounds from practice at Flowery Branch? Look no further than Chris Thomas tonight. I'll also give you an update on the Braves. Yeah, we'll talk about it. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. Oh, my goodness, the Braves. Before we let you hear from the Falcons at Flowery Branch, Oren, we need to have a little chat, you and I. Something just came across my purview, and it almost made me fall out of my seat.
Uh-oh.
MLB is now joining the ranks of the streaming wars. They are reportedly about to come to an agreement with ESPN, Peacock, Amazon Prime, and a host of other carriers.
We are literally 4 years away from there being two streaming service packages that we have to pay for to get everything involved, like everything sports related.
Wouldn't that be a novel idea? We should call it cable.
Don't let anybody hear that idea. Keep that idea to yourself, Chris.
Copyright. So here's my question. And Apple Friday Nights is about to go away, by the way. That was a yeah. I will say this, though, Oren. The games visually looked great.
They used those super high-def cameras. It
visually
was amazing.
Looked mwah. The announcers, wasn't really a fan, but whatever. One game a week. But at what point, how close are you, maybe you're even already there, to saturation? Like where you're just over it and you can no longer afford / dedicate the time, the energy, and the money to keeping up with all the streaming. How close are you to being at that point?
I don't know. I see every every few days, every month, I get those little notifications that, hey, such and such charged you this amount of money for your monthly subscription. So I have a lot of them. I'm not going to lie. I probably.
No, we all do. We all are suckers.
We're all suckers. And
between my girlfriend and I, we have Netflix, Disney Plus, Hulu, Amazon Prime, Peacock, Tubi. We have.
Yeah, Paramount Plus in there.
Paramount Plus is in there as well.
What about HBO Max?
HBO Max is in there as well. Oh, we have all of those. And you need all of those to watch sports. Depending on what's. God forbid, Orin, you're a soccer fan. Oh, my goodness.
Good luck trying to find that. Yeah.
You need
Apple TV. You don't
have
Apple TV to watch MLS.
You need Peacock. You need Paramount Plus for UEFA. I mean, it is just. So I think the question becomes, by the way, Bryce Elder sucks. He's so bad.
Yeah, I hope he's not here next year in a starting pitcher capacity.
I don't know what happened between. And the Braves are now losing 5-4. They tied it. Profar and Harris homered again.
Again.
And they're still losing 5-4. Orin to the White Sox.
The hapless Chicago White Sox.
Who put up 13 runs on your butt last night. But that's beside the point. Did you see this as well, talking about the streaming stuff? Fox and ESPN are going to offer a joint package together to sell both of their streaming services after the initial one that was called Venue Sports fell apart at the last minute. Fox and ESPN said, we're going to try this again, and that one got approved. So now you can buy all of Fox and all of ESPN for one low price of like $60 a month.
But you already get the ESPN package if you get Hulu and Disney Plus.
And Hulu, by the way, here the hits just keep coming, is going to be absorbed into Disney Plus and will no longer be a standalone app starting next year.
Oh my gosh.
Like, at what point is this thing just. Are we at the saturation point? It's got to be close, right? Like, the average American family with two or three kids, like, you can't pay hundreds of dollars a month for all these services. Again, it's almost like they should just put everything together into one big bundle and call it cable.
Again, Chris, you got to keep that idea quiet. Don't let anybody else hear you talk about this. Good thing it's only you and I talking right now and nobody else is listening. I know there's people out there listening.
So Bryce Elder's given up 8 earned runs. That just happened. Like, come on, man. At what point is it just enough? Like, Orin, Bryce Elder has a 6.29 ERA.
And you're going to trot him back out there for his next start.
And he's a starting
because he's
pitcher.
Healthy.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, good thing I got the Atlanta Baseball postgame show to chop all this up with you Braves country. All right, let's hear some Falcons. Need a palate cleanser after that depressing talk about my wallet getting lighter and the Braves continuing to stink. AJ Terrell, how about them rookies, man? He says they've all been sponges to the new defense.
But just the maturity, man. They just – Every pick is a sponge to the system and how we operate, and they've done a great job. X and Billy just playing at a high level for rookies coming in and you know, learning the playbook quick and just, you know, being accountable.
And that's really good to hear. How about him not playing in the preseason as an established vet?
I think the main thing about it is. You putting yourself in that game mentality mindset and really just going out there to execute at a high level and play as if you were, you know, take every rep as if it was a game day rep. And it took me a minute to get in that mode as far as not this year, but like years prior not playing. And then that first time playing be a shock to your body because you didn't really push through for camp. But now me knowing what I know now, these reps is really important. You know, leading up to it, just because your first adrenaline rush will be on, you know, week 1 against Tampa, but at the same time, you got to push yourself and practice for that, though.
Did you just hear that, Orin? Isn't that literally exactly what we said almost verbatim yesterday to open the show? About you can't simulate game reps even in joint practices. The adrenaline rush of getting the play call in, managing your timeouts, personnel groupings on the field. Wow. Huh. It's almost like they were listening, huh? Oh, boy, wow. We should go pull up my open yesterday from the show and just play that and then play that clip of A.J. Terrell. Wow. Okay. A.J. was also talking about the growth of the new D.C., Jeff Ulbrich.
Of course, the energy, when he came my rookie year, he was a linebacker's coach, so I was around him, but not being coached by him a lot, but it definitely bring back a lot of flashes in him, you know, developing himself, you know, becoming more of a leader and a defense coordinator and things. So it's now the torch is lit right now with him being able to have hands on with the whole defense, and you can feel his energy every day and him just wanting to attack greatness.
Yeah, and I think that the energy, especially the swarming nature of the defense, that's been infectious, and I've really liked to see that from Jeff Ulbrich so far. How about Casey Washington, a guy that's getting a lot of run here and is probably going to make the team? He was talking about how excited he is to be getting better.
I'm learning so much, and just the reps that I'm getting right now are just getting me so much better and getting me so much more comfortable physically and mentally, just getting in shape and taking the reps and really just feeling comfortable in the offense and the system with the speed of the game. That is exciting, you know. It feels like my dreams are starting to unfold, and it's a blessing, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, he was also talking about how it was this training camp that he realized that he's good enough to compete at the NFL level.
You know, after I stop overthinking everything and I just get out there and, you know, play football, I think I realized a little bit with myself that, you know, I'm good enough to play this game. You know, once I just am out there and I'm flowing, I'm playing the game free and just playing football, it starts to become fun. And, you know, when you're out there having fun, good things happen.
Another guy who good things are happening to is David Sills. This guy's interesting. He was a highly touted quarterback prospect who is now transferred to wide receiver and has a real shot to make this team.
You know, I've kind of had an interesting journey through college and high school and everything, and even in the league. But I think you know, that journey kind of makes you who you are today. You know, I wouldn't change the process, you know, what I've gone through to get to this point. You know, I think it makes me the player and the man I am today. So, you know, I wouldn't change anything, but it's definitely not how I envisioned it when I was a, you know, 10-year-old boy.
Yeah, it's not every day that you go from star QB1 to potential star wide receiver in the league. He was also talking about the offense for the Falcons, and listen, it's complex. We've all heard that, but he says he enjoys it.
I mean, they've been great. You know, I've obviously, this is my first year in the system, so I've been, you know, trying to kind of be a sponge to them and the other guys in the room, just learning the offense, you know, try to be a guy that, you know, can go in at any of the positions, you know, and it's a very complex offense, so it does take time. You know, I've always kind of prided myself on being a student of the game and to kind of knowing the offense. But, you know, this offense was definitely like learning OTAs. It kind of sounded like a foreign language, and it's starting to slow down a little bit. But, you know, they've been awesome. You know, being out here at training camp with these guys every day has been great. And I, you know, really enjoy playing in this kind of system. So.
And we'll see how much run he gets. I mean, again, I think he and Casey Washington, who you also just heard from, are going to be the last two wide receivers to make the club. And finally, a couple from Zach Robinson here talking about Bijan's role and how it's going to expand and grow from last year.
Yeah, we've kind of going back to the spring, and now that we're a full year into the system, we've definitely, you know, pushed the boundaries with what B can do, you know, in terms of lining up in different locations, different things that we're trying to activate with him. But that's been kind of the number one goal since we got back in the offseason, and in March and April was just to see where we can go with it. And he's done an unbelievable job handling everything. I mean, there's plays on the script today that, you know, he's lining up in a number of different locations, and you know, activating them in different ways. But he's done a great job handling it. Like I said, Petrie prepares those guys so well that it's pretty seamless whenever we get those things going.
Yeah, I just hope they, you know, they use them right. Don't use them too much. Make sure Algier gets in the mix, but make sure that you're also taking advantage of his skill set. He said that Zach Robinson, that is, was talking about the first team offense and how they've had a great camp. Yeah, okay, how about preseason? No, that's not happening.
It's been a really, really encouraging camp, especially from the ones, like I said, they're getting a ton of good work, and then the twos just got to keep building and keep stacking to see, you know, who ultimately ends up making this roster. And the practice squad is, as you guys know, I mean, those guys are going to be called upon at some point this season, so those guys are just as important.
Yeah, how about the preseason, Coach? Yeah, no, that's not happening. That's what I thought. One more before we get out of here. He was talking about Michael Penix Jr. and how creative he is as an offensive skill player.
I know he hasn't played a ton, so maybe there's not a ton of exposure for him to see that. Shoot, that was all over the tape at Washington, something that we liked about him. But, you know, he continues to develop, and I'm sure 3 years from now he'll even have more throws in his bank, just like all those great players do.
All right. But, again, we won't get to see any of that because they won't be playing in the preseason. All right. Well, Braves are still down 8-4. Keep you posted on that. But we do have a busy 9 o'clock hour coming up. How about we give Tech a little love and we talk a little ACC? Roddy Jones joined the morning shift. We'll let you hear that conversation, the great analyst for the ACC Network. That's coming up. And then if you missed my conversation with Caleb Johnson, you'll want to hear that one as well as Will McFadden. So a jam-packed, busy 9 o'clock hour. Also hit the Rewind app on the Odyssey app if you feel or excuse me, if you missed, I should say, any of those interviews and any of that action. Busy 9 o'clock hour coming up next. Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle with you till 10 o'clock.